Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dozy, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Pablo, co-founder of Belvo. Hey, Pablo, really excited to have you on the show today. How's everything going?
Hey, Richard. Super happy to be here, and thanks for the invite.
Cool. Let's start the show by you just sort of giving us a bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, cool. Perfect. As you said, I'm co-founder or co-CEO of Belvo, which is the open finance API platform for Latin America. So we build infrastructure for fintech innovators so that they can build, you know, modern, accessible, and inclusive financial products in Latin America through the access of finance and banking data from their end users. I spent, you know, a good chunk of my recent career in fintech. Started out 4 years ago at Revolut, the global challenger bank. I was one of the, you know, early employees, but actually started my career in finance, right? So I started my career in investment banking in London, working at Merrill Lynch, doing M&A for internet companies. So for me, you know, kind of being in the trenches of fintech and building infrastructure today is coming full circle, right? So disrupting the industry that I began in. But yeah, but after investment banking, went to the States to get an MBA in Chicago at Booth. And then after that, I've been in the tech/internet space ever since, right? So Belvo is my third company now. Spent some time also with Rocket Internet. And prior to Belvo, and actually the genesis of Belvo was, you know, through a company that both my co-founder and I were at, which is Verse, that was recently acquired by Square, the US-based fintech, founded by Jack Dorsey, also the founder of and CEO of Twitter. And that was a peer-to-peer, or that is a peer-to-peer payments company that we were looking to scale and grow to LATAM. And, you know, we found that the infrastructure that we needed was not present, and that was a common pain for a lot of folks. And that's what inspired us to start Belvo back 18 months ago.
Oh, you know, awesome. And it sounds like an interesting path and an interesting journey. And maybe we can, you know, start off there just to sort of paint the picture for our listeners. So you mentioned you worked in IB, you've also done an MBA, and you've had some tech sort of internet and startup experience. How has this helped you and also obviously your co-founder in your current venture?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, starting off in financial services, albeit obviously investment banking is not for banking, but I mean, at least you have a vision of what financial services are from the trenches and from the core and from within. So I think in general, just understanding and having a view of how inefficient finance is, I think is important. And you know, having the sense of the disruption potential via, you know, tech and fintech in particular. I think you know, aside from that, from a specific experience in financial services, I think both my co-founder and I, you know, what I would say is helping us the most has been, one, obviously the recent fintech experience on the consumer side, right? So at Revolut, at Verse. So we've been building and using firsthand the technology that we're creating and distributing at scale today, right? So, and we've been doing that in a region, which is Europe, which is much more advanced in terms of openness and kind of open banking frameworks in general, right? So, you know, we have seen the potential and we have seen the opportunities that can arise from such an infrastructure. And that's kind of what we've been, you know, building and replicating in Latin America, right? And I think the last bit, I think just the breadth of experience, I think is also great. In the sense that, you know, so my co-founder, I mean, he's a aerospace engineer. He worked at NASA. So completely different to what we're doing today. So launching small satellites has nothing to do with building fintech infrastructure, but just the breadth of experiences and having, you know, worked kind of all over the globe and having faced, you know, challenges and, you know, whether that's setting up companies or building teams and so on in all these different settings, I think is very helpful, especially when navigating kind of the changing environment, you know, not only that we live in today, but the natural environment of building a company and of scaling a company, right? So that breadth of experience is also very, I would say, something to highlight from kind of what we're bringing from our past experiences.
You touched on a few things there. I mean, maybe I'll pick up on a couple of things. I mean, you mentioned earlier on how the idea of Velvo came about. How have you guys gone through the process of validating the product in the market and then also deciding that LATAM is the space that you want to go and really penetrate and focus on?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, as I was saying, right, so we saw firsthand from building consumer fintech products in Europe that the infrastructure, you know, the open banking or open finance infrastructure made sense in general in terms of the opportunities that that presented for new and modern financial services. So we'd seen the impact that such an infrastructure had had or was having in places like Europe and places like North America and so on. So that was kind of the first bit kind of validation. I guess two is when we were looking to grow Verse, you know, one of the things that we explored was going to LATAM, right? So, and there, you know, we validated that we couldn't kind of focus on what was most important to us, which was executing and growing the company, because we would have to build this infrastructure that we now provide with Velvo from scratch, right? And there, you know, in the conversations that we had with a lot of folks, right, a lot of fintechs in the market, we validated that they faced similar issues or similar concerns, right? I think that's point number two, right? So out of a personal or out of a professional pain, we saw that, you know, there could be a big opportunity there. And I think, you know, and that's kind of the hypothesis, right? So, you know,
One,
the model exists and the pie is increased dramatically in Europe thanks to open banking. And two, in our previous business looking to expand, we didn't have the infra to do that. And other people were also complaining, also looking at other parts of the world saying, wow, I wish this existed. Same thing that exists in Europe existed in LATAM, right? And then I think, you know, when it comes to the actual hypothesis testing, I mean, for us, you know, in the first like month or month and a half or so, before we wrote our first line of code, we spoke with dozens of companies, of fintechs, just like Verse in Mexico and Brazil and Colombia, just trying to get a sense of, you know, so we know you have this pain, like, what's the product you want us to build, right? And there, you know, we spent basically the first 6 months, quote unquote, you know, co-creating or creating our MVP very much based on, you know, client feedback, client interactions. You know, as soon as we had our initial MVP or anything to show, we would, you know, go out to a few companies that we were working with in pilot mode and get feedback from them, test it out with them. So, you know, very much an iterative process over the first 6 months of product building. And I think that probably was the most important phase for us. And also, you know, not only helped validate hypotheses, but it also helped unearth pretty cool and pretty interesting findings, right? And things we've added to the product that we might not have necessarily gauged before we even engage in these conversations with prospects or with potential clients.
Yeah, I mean, is it a case of, you know, doing some research, then it's building, then it's going through a validation process? And at the back end, it sounds like you guys were measuring the outputs of the feedback and the outputs of the process, then deciding, okay, well, you know, whether it's good feedback, bad feedback, or whether, you know, depending on the feedback, you'd then go off and build the product to cater for that particular pain in the market.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
And you mentioned that you have a technical co-founder, you know, an engineer, and yourself as well as a co-founder. How does that play out in the sort of the makeup of the team and how you go about setting up your teams? Do you focus on sort of the business activities and your co-founder focuses on more the technical aspects? Can you give us some insight into that?
Yeah. And that's pretty much how we break it down. We kind of divide up areas of responsibility based on, I guess, one where each of us is, you know, an expert or more of an expert than the other one. And also on the things we enjoy and we get more of a thrill out of, right? But definitely, I mean, number one is we're experts in. So my co-founder, so he leads, you know, everything related to tech and product. And I lead the more, you know, business side, right? So, you know, sales, growth, business development, marketing, all of that sort of stuff. And yeah, I think, I mean, one interesting setup that we have is we trust one another pretty deeply. So essentially, each of us has like a definitive say into, you know, what gets done or how things are decided, right? So I think that's a neat way also of having, you know, quite a bit of kind of agility and decision making and an execution. So yeah, so that's how we're set up. I mean, it's nothing kind of too weird where there's like one technical co-founder and a business co-founder. But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of how we approach decision making, ultimately, if the area of decision falls within each of kind of our realms, then either one or the other has the ultimate say into, you know, what gets done, how it gets pushed forward and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I can completely, you know, understand what you're saying there. And you mentioned one thing there around trust. And I've seen over the years working with clients, there's probably, you know, four or five things that make up a good team, an excellent team. One is obviously trust. The other is commitment. Another is accountability. Another is results. And the last part is, you know, maybe the secret sauce that, you know, goes right through the spine is communication, right? In that vein, I mean, is there a framework or method that you guys, when I say you guys, you and your co-founder use to communicate with each other? And also, obviously, more importantly, the wider team as you grow and you scale?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. And I think that this is very important to not only consider, but to pay a lot of attention to, especially as you scale. So my co-founder and I mean, obviously, we talk every day, you know, in a whole bunch of settings, and we're on, you know, calls together, both internal and external and so on. But I think, you know, the risk of that is that you get like too bogged down in the weeds and don't necessarily like spend enough time like taking a step back and looking at the big picture and thinking about, you know, strategy long term, which is important as well to strike a balance. And I think as a founder or as a executive in a startup, you should always pay attention to, you know, are we on track with the vision and how these like more macro things are evolving. So what we do, and, you know, works pretty well for us. So we have kind of a 1 hour per week where we kind of, you know, just bounce ideas around, or where we provide each other kind of a bit of an update on things. So it's both like a personal update, right? So we spend maybe like 15, 20 minutes grabbing a, you know, maybe it's like a virtual now, but like a coffee, and, you know, we chat about, like, you know, family and personal stuff and the weekend and what have you. That element is also very important in the dynamics of a well-oiled and highly performing, you know, founding team. And then the rest is just, you know, updating ourselves on, you know, key priorities typically for the week, right? So what are the top 3-4 things that are on our minds for product, sales, for growth that we want to get feedback on or bounce ideas around with one another. And then aside from that, every couple of weeks, we do a more strategic discussion, right? So we have another hour. So every 2 weeks, we have an hour in the calendar where we chat about a general strategic theme, right? So these can be like conversations, for example, that come up in our board meetings, for example, and we want to like dig deeper and we want to do like more analysis and we want to think about it more deeply. But yeah, that's kind of the specific slots, the specific kind of dynamics that we have, you know, that work for us. But obviously, you know, every team is different, but having the commitment to those sessions, I think, is important, because otherwise it's easy to just get too like bogged down and get caught up in the weeds.
Yeah, I completely sort of agree with you there. And I love what you're saying around making certain we're on track with the vision. And obviously you guys as a duo need to do that. And, you know, just to give you a bit of a story, a bit of background, a few years ago, you know, I was brought in to a client and they asked me to help them and move them, when I say them, their team, towards a certain valuation, which is, you know, easier said than done. One thing everyone had this grand vision, right? And everyone does have a grand vision because they need to be grand visions. But one simple thing that, you know, us as an exec team came up with was making certain the heads of departments, the developers, the, you know, people in marketing or sales, the guys that are, you know, in the trenches, you know, helping us build our product and our business, are fully aware of what are our top priorities for that week or that month. And we did a bit of a test. I asked the CEO to do like 1 minute clips of the top 3 things this month. And it was, you know, a great success, because all of a sudden, these top 3 business, whether they're technology or actual business priorities, were going out to the whole organization every week, every month. And in a way, it empowered the whole team to rise to that vision. And we are able to you know, push forward quite quickly, which was, I thought was quite a neat trick, maybe a hack as they call it nowadays. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have any similar stories or any similar tricks or hacks that you'd want to share.
Yeah, so I absolutely think that, you know, that communication is key, because obviously, as you say, right, so it empowers folks in the team with goals and a mission. I think, you know, and especially becomes trickier as you grow, right? So for us, what works is we have weekly all hands meetings where the entire company is present. I mean, we've been changing the format of these as we've grown, right? So initially, like when it was like just like four or five of us, like we just do like, you know, a recap of the week from like the product and tech standpoint, you know, then we started adding more sections to give more visibility, you know, other folks in the organization were contributing. And now we essentially just, you know, break out. We have an hour every Friday. So every Friday, 4 p.m. Central European time. And we basically, you know, provide an update on all the relevant areas of the business. So, you know, we have like a general kind of a company overview that either myself, or my co-founder do, you know, general update on like the 3-4 like key updates for the week. These can be like very strategic. These can be like things that might impact the business across the board and so on. Then we look at, you know, we just review OKRs and how we're tracking. So I think for us, what works is having like a weekly kind of cadence and a weekly update on that. And then each of the team leads provides an update on their specific area, right? So how are we tracking on the, you know, the sales side? How are we tracking on the product side? How are we tracking on the people operations side? And then, you know, typically aside from, you know, having a Q&A session where anyone can participate and generally engagement is pretty high, we also do a showcase, like maybe like a 10-15 minute presentation from like someone in the team or a specific team to kind of provide insights into what they do. So this is super helpful for the rest of the organization, especially that, you know, given that as you grow, people tend to, you know, I wouldn't say that people tend to like silo into their relevant area of expertise or relevant like team, but it shows like the different impact that other folks are having towards achieving the mission, right? And I think for us, that also fosters like quite a lot of cross-team collaboration. I mean, that's something that's super important to us. I think we've been, you know, fortunate enough to, you know, instill and propagate to date, right? So having folks very, very open to helping out and giving a helping hand to others if they need it, right? So I think that part, especially that we've added recently, so that as we grow, we make sure that we provide enough visibility as to the impact of everyone in the organization. And that kind of like rotates every week, right? So, you know, one week it might be like someone in the ops team, give an update on, you know, what they do and how it's meaningful. Some other times it's like a product demo of some new feature that's been shipped that will have super high impact and the sales team can look at and go out and sell. So this sort of stuff. In general, I would say just the cadence of the weekly all hands is what works for us.
I love the fact that you guys put an emphasis on that, but also in knowledge sharing, right? It's so important, especially in a fast-paced and fast-moving environment, making certain that the knowledge is there and it's shared across teams, and also that we don't fall into those silos, because that's when it could potentially get a bit tricky to rein things in and go back to that mission, right? And that vision.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I know you guys are doing a fantastic job and you're growing rapidly. And there's, I think when we chatted last, you're up to 40 plus in, you know, roughly sort of 18 odd months, which is pretty impressive. But, you know, during that time, I guess you guys as a team have had to answer or go through a process to answer a question around in-house versus outsource. Have you guys had the discussion yet, or is it something, you know, on the cards?
Yeah, in general, we're big fans of in-house development. But I think, I mean, we're also very open and very flexible to leveraging specific expert know-how in certain areas. And so, for example, you know, for a specific solution that we're building now related to enrichment and intelligence around the data that we provide, to essentially to give our clients kind of more targeted responses based off of the data that they're able to extract through our API, like, you know, things like this person's salary, what's this person's income, how does this affect their credit score, that sort of stuff. We are leveraging kind of third parties, you know, consultants and folks that we bring in to help us get there faster and better. So I think, I mean, I would say that everything is done in-house and everything is led in-house, but we do tactically get, you know, support from specific people around specific topics. And I think that's very important, right? Because
also, you know, there's a tremendous amount of knowledge out there. And sometimes, you know, the fastest way to get it is by going to an expert and having them maybe like help you out for like, you know, a month's time or something like that. Right. And I think there, I mean, we're pretty open. We've done it a few times and it's typically worked out pretty well for us.
It makes sense bringing in SMEs when you need to. And yeah, it obviously does help you get your goals potentially quicker if you're able to find them. And on that, you know, in this instance, maybe it's SMEs, maybe it's also talent within inside your business. What process do you guys go through to find that talent, whether it's in-house talent or SME talent?
Yes, that's probably, you know, the golden question, right? I think for every innovative company, for every startup or for every tech company, I think that's always the big, big question. And I spend a lot of my time as well, making sure that we hire the best and brightest to help us achieve our mission. But it's always hard. It's always tricky, right? So the best talent is always scarce. There's always a lot of companies out there that are doing, you know, great things and interesting and challenging things. So it's hard, right? Attracting the best talent is like sales, right? So it's exactly the same, right? So it's tricky. I think for us, again, I think what works is, and this is maybe like, this contributes to a bunch of other areas, but I think for us, like, you know, when it comes to our people operations team, so we've always been very big fans of having like one, you know, that obviously in-house, but of it, you know, being like a relevant part of the business, right? So I think we brought on board our first people person or, you know, kind of people focused teammate when we were, I think, 12. So she was a 13th employee. So very, you know, kind of early on. And now, you know, we're at so we're roughly 50 people and we have a 3-person people operations team, right? Which might be a little bit above your average ratio, right? But we do it because we need to spend the time kind of finding the best talent, but also finding the best talent from on a global basis, especially given where the world is at today. Have offices in Mexico City and Sao Paulo and Barcelona. We hire remotely. So looking for the right talent, having the globe as your talent pool is challenging. But we also leverage select, again, resources to help us get there, right? So, you know, we work with a whole bunch of sourcing agencies as well. And we also spend quite a bit of time, or we have spent quite a bit of time from early days, kind of also focusing on building up our brand as well in terms of kind of Bellevue as a place to work, right? So giving a lot of visibility to the projects that we're working on, to the people that are building those projects, to how it's like to build and work and interact with the people that are behind those projects, I think is also something that we paid quite a bit of attention to and where we're spending quite a bit of time on, right? And also doing things a little bit differently as well in that area. So that, again, it is a sale and talent is typically attracted by a whole bunch of things, but also if everyone is doing the same in terms of talent attraction, then it's hard for you to be, you know, differentiated, right? So I think, you know, one of the things that we do is, you know, for example, like I'm pretty involved in talent acquisition and talent sourcing. Mm. Like I spend, you know, quite a bit of my time, like, you know, talking to folks and reaching out to folks, whether that's on LinkedIn, you know, wherever, right? And having conversations with people, and then that helps as well, right? So, I mean, obviously it's something that maybe once you get to a certain scale, it might be harder to do, but right now it's something that's definitely contributing and folks appreciate that, right? So talking to founders and having those conversations with, you know, with the people that are leading.
Yeah, I mean, I think you touched on a great nugget there, which a lot of advise my clients early on in the process, you know, hire a people's person. You know, that's maybe one of the first hires. A lot of people sometimes look at COO, CTO, and others. You know, I'm not saying they are not important roles, but chief people person or officer is important. And I think the reason why it's important, I think in my experience, when I ask the question to founders, CEOs, you know, industry leaders, what makes your company unique? 9 times out of 10 or 99% of the time, they say the people. I love the fact that your 13th person in the door was, you know, your chief people officer, and you've got a team of 3 at your team size 50. I think that sort of puts you ahead of the game, right?
I mean, that's what we want to believe. That's what we want to believe.
Cool. I mean, and listen, you know, as you guys are scaling up and moving on, I mean, you've mentioned that you and your co-founder are constantly looking and reviewing, you know, your strategy, your visions, also feedback from the board and diving deep into certain topics if required. But, you know, what questions are you asking yourself and factors are you guys considering as you move towards 2021?
Yeah. That's a good one. I think for sure, you know, so we operate across multiple countries, right? So we operate in Mexico and Brazil and in Colombia. I think a big question we always ask ourselves is replicability of operations across countries, right? So that has a big impact on how the company grows, how the business evolves, and how the culture shapes up, right? So I think that's very important, how things are done from a kind of methodological perspective in each of these places, and how, you know, all these places kind of are one of the same in terms of, you know, best practices, in terms of tooling, in terms of, I think that's tricky, especially if they're all kind of growing at the same time and growing at the same pace and different people are executing in different regions. I think that's one. Two, I think, is how do we go from a company that has very good traction, where we're at a point where we're dealing with more demand that we can cope with, but that still requires polishing around, you know, operations. It still requires polishing around product. It still requires polishing around how do we prioritize product development, that sort of stuff. I think that's always tricky, right? So the balance between sales and product is always tricky, because, you know, we have a vision. You know, the market can always kind of give you some indication as to, you know, maybe your vision has to shift a little bit that way or a little bit that way, or how you actually build up to that vision, right? So I think for us that's important as we grow and as we get into 2021. So, you know, how do we build on top of what we already have to serve our client needs, right? So how do we prioritize? How do we make sure that we're building the right things? How do we make sure that the sequence of what we're building makes sense? And also that it adds the most value to our clients, right? So, but yeah, but I think, you know, we're also looking to reach, you know, a certain kind of phase of growth, of replicability, of automation and how we do things, which should also help us open the door in a more automated fashion to more folks that want to build on top of Velvo, right? So this can also help kind of smaller developers as well, kind of getting set up and then being able to directly start using the platform, then directly getting built the platform, like all of these things that initially when you're building, there's a lot of like handholding, there's a lot of personal interactions via onboarding and so on, but kind of making sure that we build so that we can both have you know, the ability to cater to folks that just want to build and want to do it themselves, and that can be like, you know, a big chunk, and then, you know, us also being able to do like a lot more of that kind of handholding onboarding for like larger, more complex, for example, clients and accounts, right? So that's kind of what we're thinking at as well. And also, you know, big strategic project, right? So, I mean, you know, we, and this is kind of just beyond the whole like company building, but, you know, looking at specifically a product, how do we get into like the things that we want to get into, right? So, you know, we want to do like all this piece that I was mentioning, or we are building all this piece that I was mentioning around kind of intelligence or enrichment should help our clients get to answers faster, you know, especially like, for example, like lenders, which is a massive category in LATAM, and, you know, we work with many of them across the countries where we operate to help them get the answers faster, right? So how do we build that? What kind of people do we need to build that? How do we make sure that that kind of is a good complement or a good value add to what we already have today? How do we make sure that the product stays consistent in terms of, you know, discoverability, in terms of integration, in terms of so many other things as well, right? So that's also something that we will pay a lot of attention to, right? So how we continue to evolve the product and add a lot more functionality, add a lot more stuff, but maintain the essence that we always get feedback on from our clients, which is, hey, you know, building with Velvo is amazing because the documentation is super clear. It's super easy to follow. It's really kind of like a developer's dream to kind of, you know, especially in a region where building on top of APIs is hard, you know, building infra is hard, and where there isn't, you know, kind of that love towards the developer community that we're trying to also kind of instill and propagate.
Yeah, that makes complete sense how you guys are looking at the future. And, you know, I guess you know, you're an entrepreneur, you've been around the block, and part of the journey and part of the founder or co-founder and entrepreneurship journey is continuously learning and acquiring new skills or knowledge. In that vein, I mean, what are you doing right now, or what have you done in the past that helps you learn and continuously evolve and become a forward-looking leader?
I would say there's probably no silver bullet here. I mean, I think for me, what works quite a bit is just doing things and seeing if they work or not, and then learning, right? So a lot of it comes with making mistakes and failure and all that. You know, you can read stuff in like books and talking to people, but it's hard for a lot of these things to be kind of universal truths. They can put you on the right path for sure, but I think there's no better way of than doing than executing than going fast, and it doesn't work, or if it fails, then try something else, right? So I think I'm very much of that mindset, of that mantra. Other than that, I mean, I think just talking to the right people, I think also helps, right? So talking to people that have been there, done that, domain experts. So surrounding yourself with domain experts, right? I think that's something that especially now at Belvo, we are doing quite a bit, right? So especially in areas that I would say we are experts in tech. We are expert, or I mean, as you say, so we have built tech products, we have built fintech products, but there are specific areas when you're building a fintech product or an infrastructure for fintech that requires deep, 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 deep expertise, right? Yeah. So for example, things like regulation, right? So I'm not a lawyer, right? And I've dealt with regulators, and that's helped me kind of manage those situations. But like, you know, it helps to talk to the right people and be able to kind of extract the knowledge from domain experts. So I think they're like being very curious and like knocking on as many doors as possible helps. And I think that's helped me, you know, always coming in with like a fresh and open mind. Like you know, when talking, like maybe like this is like a good example, right? So on the regulatory side, like, you know, being very, very candid and being very kind of honest about, you know, hey, like, I don't know a lot of these things. Like, you guys help me out and understand and all of these things, right? And chances are people want to help you, right?
Yeah.
And odds are people want to help you. So I think they're like not being afraid of like reaching out to like domain experts, I think is something that I've learned, especially kind of as we've built Belvo, right? And having like a core group of like domain expert advisors and surrounding yourself with that, you know, with those resources that you can leverage, you know, kind of day in and day out has been very helpful.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's so important to surround yourself with those experts, as you say. And listen, mate, as we wrap up the show, how can people find you and also reach out to the guys at Belvo?
Yeah, so I mean, we're online, belvo.com. So I mean, that's definitely kind of the gateway to find us. And that's kind of, you know, anyone looking to build, you know, innovative fintech products or innovative financial products in Latin America, definitely check us out. And happy to chat. For folks that are interested in joining, as we say, the open finance, you know, revolution in LATAM, and they want to kind of join the team, I mean, we currently have 15 open positions across the board, you know, whether that's product, engineering, growth, sales, and so on. So belvo.com/careers for that. And yeah, and I mean, you know, always happy to chat, you know, whether that's commercials or talent, and, you know, also happy to give kind of advice to folks that are starting up as well, whether that's in LATAM or elsewhere.
No, awesome. And it's been brilliant listening to how you guys started out and also your journey. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Richard. My pleasure. And thank you very much for the invite.